Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. The worldwide coronavirus pandemic has resulted in the deaths of almost 4 million people. It has had an impact on life in the largest cities and smallest villages. Education is one aspect of life that was disrupted throughout the world. On Smart Talk, teachers from Russia, Nigeria, Mexico, and the United States join us to discuss how education was affected by the pandemic and what the future holds post-pandemic. Today's program is a first in the 13-year history of Smart Talk. We have four guests from four countries and three continents, all joining us from overseas. All four are 2020 Global Teacher Prize finalist teachers. Joining us on today's program are Ola Sunkami Orkpe Ifa. He teaches at the Government Day Secondary School in Karu, Abuja, in Nigeria. Lucine Jongir-Ion, Secondary School Number 18 in Akinsk, Krasnoyarsk, in Krai, Russia. Gustavo Caterone de Anta teaches at the Instituto Alpes in San Javier, Guadalajara, in Mexico. And then there's Jeff Remington teaching at the Palmyra Middle School in Lebanon County. If you have a question or a comment for our distinguished panel today, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Now, Jeff Remington, I'm going to start with you. This was your suggestion that we talk about education around the world. I like the topic, and I know that our audience will find it fascinating as well. But why did you think that this is something that a lot of people should know about?
Okay, for me, when I was one of the finalists in this award and got to meet teachers, these amazing teachers from around the world, it really opened my eyes to what's called the United Nations Goals for Sustainable Development that many teachers around the world teach about. And it opened my eyes to the disparities that education has around the world. We would meet almost monthly, the crew that's on this call, and just sharing like different experiences that we had. We had similarities, but it was shocking to me. Of the differences that that education has around the world.
Well, we're going to talk about some of those differences as well. But one of the things I want to do in this conversation is talk about each of the home countries and the regions from which these teachers come from. So, Jeff, let's start with the U.S. I mean, many parents, many Americans are you know, familiar with what the country has gone through over the past year. But how would you describe it during the pandemic, education in America?
Okay, for me, my biggest takeaway with education in America is that we need to strike a systemic balance between extrinsic motivation and intrinsic motivation and truly value lifelong learning. So what I mean by that is in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure in other states, we hit this point where for us in Pennsylvania, it was called continuity of education when the pandemic first hit. And right then there was a prioritization that emphasized core subjects at the expense of non-core subjects. So that was a bit of a reflection to me on what's already happening. What do we value most? We value most test scores in math and language arts at the expense of social emotional learning, at the expense of STEM, at unified arts, at the creative arts, at all those other things. And then what I noticed is once we started back in school, I felt there really was a devaluing in subjects outside of those core subjects. I think that happened just about everywhere with people that I talked to in the United States.
So what you're saying is that those criticisms before the pandemic of teachers having to teach to the test, of school districts putting so much emphasis on test scores on those core subjects, that it was even more emphasized after the pandemic or during the pandemic?
Absolutely. I think it comes down to we treasure what we measure. And you know, when you look at employers, what do employers want? Yes, they do want skills in math and language arts, but there's a big disconnect. They want employability. They want the creativity. They want those skills, those 21st century skills, growth mindset, all those things that we don't really measure those. So they're not really brought about systematically in school systems across the country. Employers want it. Our metric for school systems, if you look at U.S. News and World Report, they are ranking the schools based on math and reading scores and graduation rates. If you look at real estate metrics for a school district, same kind of metrics. But if you ask employers what they're looking for, they're not looking for, you know, employees that come from a low tax school district and necessarily high reading and math scores.
All right, let's move around the world now. I want to start with Ms. John Giriron from Russia. I understand that you're in Armenia right now. What I'm going to ask first of each of you is to kind of describe your overall education systems, and then we'll talk about the pandemic. So Russia, what kind of education system maybe we're not familiar with here in the U.S., but how would you describe Russia's education system?
First of all, thank you for hosting us today at this wonderful show. And yes, the COVID-19 pandemic had a huge impact on all areas of human life, and it didn't bypass the educational field as well. And in Russia, you know, universities turned out to be the most ready for this transition, as they had long developed courses that are taught in this format, while schools had to respond quickly to changes and organize a new distance learning format and rearrange the schedule. And I can say that schools weren't ready. They weren't flexible enough to have a smooth transition to distant learning. And it should be admitted that a lot of teachers were not ready to switch to alternative teaching formats. They lacked the knowledge to successful using of learning platforms and organizing lessons in a new way. And this led to the need for additional training of the teaching staff and the organizing assistance for them so that they could quickly acquire the necessary skills in working with technologies. And
what I was going to ask about was those technologies. You said that the schools weren't prepared and weren't flexible in moving to distance learning. You know, one of the issues that had to be dealt with here in the United States was students having access to computers or to Wi-Fi so that they could learn virtually. What about in Russia? I mean, did students have that access?
I don't think that all the students have good access to internet and online tools. And for example, in April, the Higher School of Economics published a report, Readiness of Russian Schools and Families to Study Under Quarantine. They mentioned that 25 of school children live in all, for example, in low income families, and 50% they live in rural areas, for example, and don't have equal access to online tools. Also, hello?
Yeah, you're still here.
Yeah, and a large families, neither financially nor physically, can provide the conditions for children to study online at home and at the same time. A low level of digital competencies among junior school children, for example, as well as the lack of self-organization skills also are kind of underwater rocks during the school closures and online learning.
I want to go to Nigeria now, and Mr. Orkpe Ifa, who teaches at the Government Day Secondary School in Abuja. And I understand that we have a little bit of noise in the background. Kids are, your students are changing classes. You know, it's kind of cool that we could hear what's going on in the hallways and in the classrooms in Nigeria. So tell me a little bit about schools in Nigeria, and what did you experience, or what did the schools experience during the pandemic?
All right. Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. During the pandemic, it was a totally woeful situation. Now, Nigerian education run like, let's say, 16 years of education. We have 6 years of primary school. We have 6 years of secondary school and at least 4 years of higher institution. That's university, polytechnic, and other ones. Now, during the pandemic, it was a totally woeful situation. I mean, it opened our eyes to see the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, to see the depth of inequality that we have in Nigeria, and let me say, in Africa as a whole. As soon as it started, students in public school went totally locked down. Education was totally locked down. Nobody had access to education anymore, let's say schooling anymore. However, some private schools were fast enough to jump on the available technology to them, say WhatsApp, talk about some used Microsoft Teams, Zoom, Google Classrooms, like that. But if you check the percentage, they were less than 10% of the entire population of students. So close to 90% of students were locked down and they had no access to education. Now, the worst was the university. At a particular time, the head of the pressure group, the union group of lecturers in Nigeria, we call them ASU, lamented and confessed that Nigerian universities were not, that is the public one anyway, were not ripe, were not ready for online learning, could not go online. Now, that was for public school and government school. A lot, or let me say, all the private universities went online and completed the school years. Now we have a lot of disparity now. While some students that started admission at the same time are still backward, a lot of their mates in private schools are ahead of them. So the pandemic generally just opened our eyes to see the depth of inequality that is in our society. So many students, pupils in secondary school, primary school, could not have access to the least gadget, the least data to connect online. At a particular time, it was becoming serious for some of us. And let's even talk about teachers. So many teachers were not even prepared for this. I mean, we were used to coming to the classroom, writing on the board, the chalkboard, the whiteboard, and going home. Now you want the teacher to come on Google Classroom, to come on Microsoft Teams, to come on Zoom. I mean, the technicality, the know-how of this was a big problem. Many of them were asked to prepare their lesson in slides. I mean, to understand how PowerPoint slides will work, to record something in Excel sheet and the rest became a big problem. Some of us had to jump on this and start training teachers on how to do this. So at the end of the day, it was a total failure, I must say, as far as Africa is concerned, because internet was a problem for us. To connect online was a big problem. It was very expensive to connect. To even have access to the children, to get them gadgets to learn was a problem. But I must give big thanks to some state governors. Some of them had to go on television stations, got some teachers, and started teaching online, like states in Ogun State, I think Kogi State, and some other states in the country anyway, went online. And I think a friend in Kenya, Lina Ayago, also assisted too in her own country. She went online and started doing a lot of television programs. South Africa too, what's her name there? Also the top 10 finalists did some fantastic job, but these were individual contribution of teachers to help education. And interestingly, so many of us could not wait for us to be set free from the lockdown. We wanted to go back to the classroom. And interestingly, as soon as we asked to go back to the classroom, of course, we forgot the technology. A large number of us forgot technology, and we are back now with our chalk and with our pencils.
And it sounds as if the students in the background are excited to be back in school as well.
They are excited to be back to school, I must tell you.
Well, thank you. All right, so let's turn to Mexico now. Gustavo Cataron de Anta, I saw during our Zoom, as our other panelists were speaking, that you were nodding in agreement with a lot of the things that were being said. So in Mexico, the United States' closest neighbor, first of all, describe education overall in Mexico and what it was like during the pandemic.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation. Well, here in Mexico, before the pandemic, we were in a very traditional instruction model. So we were in a transition from a traditional education system into a one with the student at the center of the instruction. So we were in that process of transformation. We have a strong problem with access to technology. So we were not ready for this dramatic change in terms of, before the pandemic, you were used to give your classes in a traditional setting, in a traditional instruction. And right now we have this technology and you need to change dramatically your instruction model and this kind of technology skills. So this was very difficult for teachers here in Mexico. Right now, we are facing one of the biggest challenges in terms of education, not only in Mexico, but I think all the Latin American region. According to the World Bank, this region in particular is the most affected in the world due to the pandemic. We still have our schools closed. So this is a very sad situation here. And the vaccination here in this region is really slow. So we have no hope in terms of reopening the schools in a full mode. So we are going to transition in a hybrid model here. So we have a lot of differences between school, between public school system and the private school system here. And millions of children in this Latin American region has dropped their studies because they need to work in order to help families that face or they lost their jobs in because of the pandemic situation here. So it's a very sad situation. So I really hope we can open schools soon and we can give our students these skills they need to thrive in this 21st century world that we are living right now.
I tell you, one of the themes I hear, and it sounds familiar even here in the United States, maybe not to the degree that the three of you are experiencing in your countries, but that inequality, haves and have-nots, and that access to technology. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about education around the world today during the pandemic. And as I mentioned just before the break, that a theme has emerged. It is not just here in the United States. It's not just here in Pennsylvania, where we're hearing about some schools that have more resources than others and have more access to technology, that these are two of the big challenges that it seems as though schools around the world are facing during this pandemic. Our guest today, Lucine Jangir-Iran, she teaches at a secondary school number 18 in Russia. Gustavo Cataron de Anta teaches at a school in San Javier, Guadalajara in Mexico. Olasun Kami or Ifa, a government day secondary school in Nigeria, and Jeff Remington teaches at the Palmyra Middle School. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Jeff Remington, you've been on our program many times, and we've talked about mostly the STEM topics, science, technology, math, engineering, but I kind of want a big picture question for you is that, are you hearing those same themes, or are these things that you've noticed as you've had conversations with our other panelists and from teachers around the world?
Can you clarify in regards to STEM education or just
No, I just mentioned STEM, but I meant that inequality, that haves, have not, yes, access to resources, access to technology.
Yes, that's been a universal conversation. I feel like we are very, very privileged in the United States. I know we've had problems. I know we've had inequities. But talking about the scale of it compared to what's happening in Africa and India, where teachers have been trying to deliver education on a device called WhatsApp, a platform called WhatsApp, because they may not, you know, people may not have access to a computer, but many people around the world have a cell phone. So some teachers were just literally using WhatsApp like text messaging like lessons for kids to do. I know Africa and India have been doing a lot of that. I think Russia, you know, I can't speak for the others, but I feel like we have been blessed to have a decent amount of technology compared to a lot of developing countries.
And something that Mr. Orkpe Ifa mentioned about television stations, we here at WITF, other public TV stations around Pennsylvania, took to the TV screens to get into some of those rural areas that, you know, where there wasn't Wi-Fi, where there wasn't a broadband access. So, you know, one of the things that has come out of this is people have really had to think about ways to teach children, to educate children. Now, we got a phone call from a teacher in Australia. So we are truly going worldwide here. And you all have touched on this a little bit with his question, but listen to what he has to ask.
My name is Ken Silburn, a science teacher from Sydney, Australia. We are currently on school break, but as a state, we are currently also in forced lockdown. In regions where schools are delivering content online, my question is, what works? And more importantly, what doesn't work? Thank you.
So, Lucine Jangiran, let me start with you. What works? What doesn't work?
Okay. School closures were really a very big challenge for all of us, and teachers demonstrated creativity and hard work. They shared their best practices to support each other. And, you know, of course, there were a lot of different webinars and seminars, but teachers had to find more suitable ways for the students. And I think that it was a very big work was done for teachers themselves. And if you allow me, I would like to mention one important thing here, that it is related to the impact of the pandemic on the education system. It is not only about, not only a big because the lockdowns has forced the search for new approaches to learning, it also showed the importance of the role of teachers in the learning process. It is the teacher who reorganized, learned, created, arranged, picked the most suitable ways to reach out for students, guided, instructed, helped, transferred material to a new format, and monitored all this. They conducted all the process, provided psychological help to students, and did everything to support them. But on the other hand, what was done for teachers to remove their anxiety, to reduce the huge burden that fell on their shoulders unexpectedly? Teachers did their best to reduce the stress of students as much as possible, but at the same time, many experienced tremendous stress and pressure, a feeling of worry, nervousness, uncertainty. And I think that teachers are, they deserve more attention by government. They are really the cornerstone of school.
Did you experience those anxieties that you were talking about?
You know, as for me, I was very, really lucky to bring technologies to my classroom long before the pandemic, even though I didn't have appropriate equipment at first. And it was step by step provided with it by my school administration. And blended learning and flipped classroom techniques were incorporated in my classes long before the pandemic. Anyway, yes, it was nervous because it was very unexpected and we hadn't experienced such kind of things before. So yes, and a lot of teachers had no experiences in technologies, and yes, they had anxiety, they were worried. So I think that teachers deserve more attention by government. What was successful? I can say that schools in Russia became really much more flexible than previously. And for example, during new waves of epidemic, we can easily switch to online learning, or you know, I can mention one maybe small or maybe even funny thing, but it is not funny for people who live in Siberia. As you know, winters are really very harsh in Siberia, and for example, previously we were forced to sit home without any classes when we had 35, 38 degrees minus zero, I mean Celsius. But now we easily switch to online learning without any stress, because yeah, teachers learned a lot and they are using all this in their career.
Yeah, that 35 below zero, I don't know if I'd say that's funny or not, but I know where you're coming from.
So can transfer it to Fahrenheit. Sorry, I can't say it in Fahrenheit right now.
Mr. Deonta, let's talk about Mexico and get back to the caller's question. What worked and what doesn't?
Well, I think that one of the most important or meaningful learning here during facing this pandemic is that teachers are not only these content deliverers. Educational process is something that needs to be a personal experience for our students. So as Ola Sunkami said before, here in Mexico and many schools in the Latin American region, we follow this initiative of delivering content through television and through radio station programs. But what we found is that it's not only about the content, about giving the curriculum or the content of the different subjects, but the most important thing here is the work, the role of a teacher as this person who can explain the topics, who can give these or develop these social emotional skills for students. So I think this is one of the most important findings here. So the role of a teacher, not only as a content deliverer, but the way we as teachers can develop the skills our students need to thrive in this complex world. So another thing that I think that is very important is that we need to rethink the way our school systems are developing these skills. So not only of guarantee this technology access, but how we can design these professional development programs for teachers so they can maximize the use of technology in terms of developing these skills that are needed for students.
What didn't work, Mr. Deonta?
Sorry?
What didn't work? The question, you know, that the caller had about what worked and what didn't. What didn't work during this pandemic?
I think that didn't work. If we design this kind of one size fits all for students, right? Mm. So I think the personalization of education, it's something that should be a priority after we can go back to school. So thinking that all students learn in the same way, with the same resources and the same tools, I think it's one of the biggest mistakes in education. So I think when we have the opportunity to come back to schools, we need to work very hard in this personalization of education.
Boy, that sounds familiar as well. Mr. Orpe Ifa, what about in Nigeria? What worked for you? What didn't?
All right, thank you. Basically, what worked actually could be very relevant to education, but let me list some of them. Management of communication worked. Yes, we're still able to communicate via whatever platform, WhatsApp, Telegram, all the social media that you can think of. Yes, we're still able to communicate, but not educate, but we'll come to that. Then teachers' creativity, yes, came alive. Without thinking of how to solve problems, yes, that worked for us. Yeah, beyond entering the classrooms, now we're thinking, what other things can we do to solve our problem? Yes, creativity came alive. Education also beyond hard skills to soft skills also worked for us. Teachers had to learn how to give emotional support via different media. That worked to an extent anyway. Then, of course, the need for alternative to learning, the need for something beyond the classroom, also it opened our eyes. Probably we didn't see it done, but at least we became conscious of it. And then basically we became conscious of the need to integrate ICT in our education. Yes, it worked while it opened our eyes because it came suddenly. So all this worked for us by exposing us to the problems we have and problems we need to solve. And what didn't work? One is core rural areas were left out. Despite all we did, getting radios, I mean, at a point we started teaching on radios. I mean, can imagine teaching Pythagoras theorem on radio. How do you describe certain things raised to power? What? I mean, in local area, in rural area, that didn't work. Some could not even get batteries to power their radio. Some no power like that. So another thing that didn't work, again, is sudden change in the channel of pedagogy. That didn't work. Our pedagogy was used to the physical one. Imagine field trip. We were never prepared for that. So the change in pedagogy to ordinary talking didn't work for us at all. And then the boredom and time taking, I can imagine my first video lesson was about 20 minutes. When I listened to it myself again, I became bored. And that didn't work. Just listening to someone honestly didn't work. And finally, like what Gustavo said, teachers becoming content creators, not educators, did not work. I mean, suddenly, thank God some of us had to come back to the classroom physically. Some of us were becoming Facebook, YouTube merchants. We're looking for subscribers. We're looking for, surely YouTube may pay us, Facebook may give adverts. Actually, we're shifting our roles to ordinary content creators, not work for us.
Also, Scott, can I add something?
Yes, go right ahead.
I don't teach at elementary level, but my colleagues from elementary school shared some problems with me. For example, a low level of digital competences among junior school children, as well as their lack of self-organization skills. This requires the presence of adults during their training. And during the coronavirus pandemic, when children and adults stayed at home together, this became possible. But most parents themselves were not mentally ready for constant participation in the education life of their children. Also, among the disadvantages which mentioned my own students are the technical problems on the platforms. For example, educational material is not loaded, or pages are frozen, or the result may not be saved at once. But the main disadvantage and the main minus mentioned by my students was the lack of live communication among the teacher and students, so among their teachers and classmates.
We're going to talk more about that and some of the emotional needs and some of the things that you as teachers did to meet those emotional needs of students in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Fascinating conversation with our guest from around the world today. Jeff Remington is in Palmyra. He teaches at the Palmyra Middle School. Gustavo Catarón Dianta teaches at a school in San Javier, Guadalajara in Mexico. Lucine Jongir-Ian is a secondary school teacher in Russia. And Olasun Kami or Peifa at a government day secondary school in Nigeria. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Jeff Remington, let me turn to you about, you were talking about your observations for American education. All of our guests mentioned students may or may not have been ready to go back to school. It was mentioned that parents may not have been ready for their children to go back to school. It seems as though, obviously, the pandemic of the past year has presented a lot of mental health challenges, a lot of emotional challenges. People that have been in isolation away from other people for over the past year. In your classroom, your experiences with kids in Palmyra, what did you notice? What did you have to do differently as a teacher to maybe make up for some of those things that they missed over the past year?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm going to say a lot of people use the term learning loss. I like to coin a phrase. Actually, I like to use a phrase that Stephen Pruitt coined called unfinished learning. I don't think learning ever stops. I think it's that intrinsic thing called growth mindset. I think teachers help facilitate that. But I think Palmyra did a super job with all hands on deck. I mean, we were talking about the creativity of teachers. I'm going to go even one step beyond that and say creativity of our support staff, our crew in the food staff, making sure meals were delivered, making sure nobody went hungry. Our counseling staff worked double overtime. And a lot of people don't even know really that counseling staffs exist at schools. So they were working overtime. Our social worker, Lindsay and her team have been working very, very hard. So I feel like although it wasn't perfect and we were a growth in progress, we all pitched in, all hands on deck, helped out with the lift, and everybody just supported everybody else. And I think we made an impact. Yes, we saw a lot of families struggling, but I feel like we did our very best to meet the need. And I think regionally, people looked up to Palmyra as one of the leading schools in the area for how we handled the pandemic.
When you say a lot of families struggling and a lot of children struggling, in what ways?
Financially, also loneliness. But the funny thing is also I've noticed some kids thrived in online learning. So what connections we made there, and this is universal. This is not just Palmyra. This is everywhere. I think all of us on this call realize that kids get bullied in school. No matter how you dress it up, there's bullying or those kind of things that are happening in school. When you're physically in school, it's hard for a child to deal with that. But when they're behind a screen and away from physical, you know, bullying or those kind of things that might happen in a school in a face-to-face situation, they had a feeling of lessened anxiety being on screen, where feeling that in-person bullying wasn't going to happen. So that population of kids that were worried about that, they seem to thrive online. So what does this mean? This means, I think, moving forward, I think the other teachers have mentioned this, we've got to look at a whole platform, a whole toolbox of how we can reach individual learners for what works best for them and their families.
So, Mr. Dianta, you were one of the first to mention during this conversation about one of the things that you've learned. We have only about 10 minutes left in the program, and I'd like to ask each of our guests the same thing. It sounds as if there may be some positive things that that will come out of this pandemic. And as you mentioned, what you learned or what schools in Mexico learned is that you need more one-on-one. You need more the realization that not every student is the same. So is it accurate to say that some of the lessons learned during this pandemic will have a positive impact going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of the biggest learnings, at least for myself, the responsibility I have as a teacher to design a personalized learning experience for each of my students, taking in account their context, their emotions, their interests, so they can thrive in the middle of these chaotic times that we are facing right now. So, for example, in my case, I also teach computer science and maker STEAM disciplines. So during the pandemic, I need to rethink the way my students can develop these skills in terms of using the machines, the tools, how they can code microcontrollers, even in the virtual setting. So what I did here is to design some kits with microcontrollers and sensors and send these kits to my kids' home and giving this opportunity to experience this kind of education even in the middle of a hybrid model or online instruction. So I think one of the biggest learnings here is how we as teachers can develop the maximum capacity of our creativity and innovation skills in order to design this personalized learning experience in order to help our students, but not only our students, but also their families, because families, parents are not the experts in terms of pedagogy, in terms of giving the accurate tools and methodologies for our students to develop these skills. So I think this is one of the biggest learning here.
Let me turn to Nigeria now, Mr. Orkpaife Ifa. What lessons were learned during this pandemic that maybe can have a positive impact in the future of education in Nigeria?
All right, thank you. I think lessons learned here is the emotional support to well, I talked the other time that students from had access to education, who did not. Now, flipping the situation for the teachers in most paid salaries, their families, and they had no support at all. Civil servants got their salaries and they were still.
I think we're going to have to go back to you because all of a sudden we're losing your Zoom. Hopefully, maybe you turn your video off, Mr. Orkpaife Ifa, and maybe that will help us a little bit. Let's turn to Russia now, and Ms. Jangirian, what I wanted to find out is if there were lessons learned during this pandemic that can be carried forward that will have a positive impact.
Thank you for the question. I agree with all my colleagues mentioned, and I want to mention some more positive things for me. The first is that parents at last finally understood that teachers are called not only to teach their own subject, but also the soft skills, 21st century skills, global competence. You know, sometimes I had a case when a parent called me and asked, why are you teaching, for example, digital literacy? Your job is teaching English grammar. I think that they finally understood that the school is not the same as previous, and teachers are called to do much more than just teaching academic skills, and we are called to help students to gain capacity that will help them to help them find their place in the world, discover who they are, And also, I think that the global pandemic proved once more that students should be taught 21st century skills, including digital literacy, and be helped to see themselves as a part of the global community and should be able to collaborate on global issues. I just want to add one small thing. I try to have evening lessons, especially extracurricular activities, and my students liked it very much. And I even invited to our extracurricular activities students from classes which I not even teach, and they joined us eagerly, and it was really fun. And we traveled virtually around the world, had a lot of connections with students and teachers from different countries, and shared our cultures and presented our own culture. So this is one more positive experience, which I am going to continue. I mean, evening classes.
It's interesting that... It's a worldwide thing that there are parents calling and complaining to their teachers about something their child thought that was just an American thing. I guess it's happening around the world. We only have about 2 minutes left, and I think that Mr. Orkpe Ifa is with us now. Are you there, Ola?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. All right. So in about 2 minutes, positive lessons that can be taken forward from the pandemic.
Support to one another is one. At a particular time, I gathered teachers together and we started doing a lot of things. I mean, we threw parties. Some were not collecting salaries. We shared the little we had. And when we resumed, I mean, it was a joyful moment. Point, empathy happens to be there.
Actually, I hate to say it, but we are still losing you. You know, we went through 55 minutes of real good Zoom audio, and then the last 2 minutes, we kind of lost it. So, Jeff Remington, let me go back to you in our last minute, a couple minutes or so. Again, thank you very much for suggesting this topic. I mean, this is not only fascinating, but we've probably learned a lot. And, you know, something was said just a few minutes ago the students got to learn globally about, you know, what is going around the world. And that seems to be another theme in education today, is that American students, for example, or students in these other countries, can't just think locally. They do have to think globally. So there are some positives that have come out of this, Jeff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know it, Scott, just from right here in Pennsylvania, we have Senator Almet and a bipartisan committee came up with Senate Resolution 144, which is forming an education commission to look at those kind of things. PA budget that was just passed, you saw the education thing there. We have an initiative called PA Smart, which helps address that. The PA Chamber is all on this. And the State System of Higher Education has an organization called Prepared for PA. So we as a state we've got people on this. So it's hopeful. So a lot of good things are coming out, and it's sort of validated directions that state government started to go in before the pandemic.
Well, I want to thank all our guests for being with us today. We're in different time zones, and in Ola's case, he had students that were passing in the hallways behind him and everything else, but we made it work, and I want to thank you very much for your insights and what you do and what you've done during this pandemic. But United States, Russia, Mexico, and in Nigeria as well. A first for us on this program, and thank you for making it happen. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.